Click kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast.
5 decades of SA music, and this is your contribution. Sheldon, good evening and welcome.
Good evening. How are you doing?
This is an interesting title, 5 decades of SA music.
Yeah,
SA pop music, huh?
Yeah, I just thought, it's Thursday. It's the last day and it's your weekend. Yeah. Pamela, it's your weekend.
Yes.
So we need to call in the weekend with a vibe. And so today I was like, we need to have some vibey songs. And so I thought, and let's do some South African songs. And let's look at the evolution of South African pop music over 5 decades. So we haven't started sequentially. We're not doing this in a sequence. But this is a 1980s song. And you can hear, look, I wouldn't say this is the epitome of South African greatness as far as pop music is concerned. It's very repetitive, but you can hear 80s here. Like, you can hear the 80s sounds.
You can
all
hear
there.
The bubble gum.
Yeah. It's even popping. The bubble gum is even popping.
I don't know if the bubble gum is popping. I don't know. It's the bubble gum of the
But you
80s.
Can hear a lot of like you can hear like elements of Madonna in there. You can hear the pre-programmed drums and like almost like a cowbell in there. It's just cheesy, and it's the epitome of 1980s pop.
Absolutely.
Sound.
It's got the 1980s South African color.
Yeah.
And you can't deny that.
You can't deny it. Mercy Pakela. Interestingly enough, her story, she started in Port Elizabeth, and at the age of 16, she decided that she was going to hitchhike her way to Johannesburg, which sounds like the Brenda Fassie story,
yeah.
But from Cape Town. This one came from Port Elizabeth. And she got all the way to Johannesburg, and whilst in Johannesburg, she stayed in a woman's hostel in Soweto and auditioned for a company called Patience Africa, who then gave her accommodation, and she did tours, and at that stage she was getting between 5 and 7 rand for an appearance, and then she released her debut album in 1985. She was signed to a guy called Ron Brettel, who was the keyboardist for PJ Powers, and she said her first album sold very well. She sold 15,000 units, but she didn't make any money. This Chesa Mateki was her big hit. It's been downloaded over 8 million times, and she says she has never been paid for it. And it's a symptom.
And Sheldon, you and I come back to this all the time.
Yeah.
That you have artists who literally brought daylight have been robbed. And how do we, especially with this new technology now where we're all on, you know, we're downloading the music, you're not going to the shops, you're not buying a CD. How does, specifically, and I want to say this because I think this is the same with other artists in this country.
Mm.
Not just in the country, in the continent,
yeah.
Right? So content producers do not get paid fairly as compared to their American counterparts,
yeah.
and other parts of the world. How do artists right now get around all of this?
Look, firstly, I think as a 16-year-old leaving your home and coming to Johannesburg out of desperation, you're going to take whatever you're going to get. And if you're not willing to spend the 2,000 or 3,000 rand to go and see a lawyer to give you proper advice, you're going to get taken advantage of. The industry is structured in such a way that people will take advantage of you if they can. Anyone will do it. In any industry, they will take advantage of you if they can. Realistically, if you look at the way people are consuming music today versus back in those days, it is... you're going to have to work a lot harder to make a sustainable income in this industry. If you consider that, for example, when back in our day, you went to the shop and you bought a Brenda Fassie album for 150 rand. You were buying Brenda Fassie for 150 rand. Now you are buying a subscription to Spotify for 99 rand. If you consider... like in a month, you're probably going to listen to 1,000 songs for 99 rand. If you take that 99 rand and divide it by 1,000 songs, obviously you're not going to make the kind of money Brenda Fassie was doing off one sale of one album. So it's a numbers game. How many people can you attract to your platform? How many people can you push there? You need to build up an audience. And you're also dealing with 100,000, 200,000 tracks being uploaded on streaming platforms on a daily basis. So the competition levels are very high. The good news is that South Africa is one of the fastest growing music industries in the world. We are part of the biggest growing music region in the world. Africa is the biggest music region in the world. And South Africa is the biggest growing region within Africa. So there's a huge appetite for South African music. And so this is the right time to be involved in music in this country, because we are taking off. You can see with people like Tyler, the South African sound is all over the place. So it is the right time, but it requires very disciplined and concerted effort and an investment in yourself, because nowadays you can control the narrative of your career unlike any other time in history. In the past, the way it used to work was a record company and a radio station and managers and agents and PR companies controlled the narrative. They controlled what would be released, when it would be released, how it would be released, what it would look like. And now that is in the hand of the artist. The artist can decide when, how much, where, what it will look like. They can make all of those decisions on by themselves. But I recommend that they go and they inform themselves of what their rights are and how they can control their content.
Kaya.
959. I mean, this is iconic, though. This is definitely Manga Groove.
We're trying to bring the vibe today, you know? So that was the whole idea. The first we had Freshy Ground with Doobie-Doo. Interestingly enough, I don't know why there's so many famous South Africans that come from GQ, old Port Elizabeth. Yes. Because Zolani, also from Port Elizabeth, studied in Cape Town. And there she made a few friends whilst in Cape Town and decided to form this band. And they did this song called Doobie-Doo, which Native Magazine called a post-apartheid jingle. Now, the interesting thing about Freshly Ground next to Mango Groove is that Mango Groove was at the end of the apartheid era, and Mango Groove was at the end of the apartheid era. So you're looking at two pieces of music that happened on either side of the spectrum. What I find very interesting, and which completely differentiates South African protest music from other protest music from around the world, is that when we're doing protest music, usually with a protest song, what usually happens is the tempo is quite slow and intentional. The idea is that the focus is on the message of the music.
Yes.
And so the songs are very, very intentionally written in a specific way to draw attention to the message. But that couldn't be the case in South Africa, because we had a censorship board at the SABC that used to vet anything that was released in the country. And so if you had something very slow and intentional, that would immediately alert the censors to the fact that maybe this song is trying to communicate a very specific message. So a lot of our protest musicians in this country resorted to writing songs that were quite jovial and up-tempo. If you listen to songs like Meadowlands, for example, it is quite an up-tempo song.
Yeah.
And that was done in a very specific and intentional way to try and confuse the senses and, divert their attention from what the songs were talking about. A lot of the songs were also written in very ambiguous lyrics so that they wouldn't pick up on the fact that, oh, this is what they're actually saying. The reality, however, was that the people on the ground knew exactly what those musicians were talking about because they were there. They knew what the reality was. And so almost like a gaslighting, because you're like sending this message out. It's jovial. It's happy. It's talking about these wonderful things in the lyrics. And the people on the ground are going, but that's not what's happening. Mm. You know, like our 40 white refugees that landed up in the United States. That's not what's happening. We're confused. And so that used to coalesce the people and bring them all together. And so you'll find a lot of our protest music doesn't conform to the usual tenets of protest songs. So I found, like, if you listen to this Doobie Doo, it's a very uplifting song. I mean, it's trying to promote a message of, like, you know, things are going to be good. Things are going our way. And that's exactly what the song was talking about. But it was also talking about some hurt and some pain and having to go through that to get to a place of nirvana where everything will be okay somewhere down the line. So that was Doobie Doo. Mango Groove was very clever. So Doobie Doo was 2004. So that was the decade, the 10s. And Mango Groove was 1990. So right at the end of apartheid, and it came from the album Home Talk. So Home Talk is from the album Home Talk. On that album, there's a song called We Are Waiting, which was written specifically and released before the album was even released, specifically to welcome President Nelson Mandela, because there was talk that it might be released or whatever, and they wrote the song in anticipation of the release of Nelson Mandela. And actually what happened was, when Nelson Mandela was released, Nightline, which is an American current affairs program, used Home Talk as the song that they played when Nelson Mandela, when they were doing the footage and everything. That was the song that they used, the We Are Waiting. But anyway, this album was Mango Groove's second album, actually like third album, because the first one was a bit of a dud sleeper album, which they sort of reused many of those songs from the first album on the first official album. So this was like the third, but actually the second. And what was very clever about Mango Groove was that it was an assimilation of different sounds, both pop and both indigenous South African sounds, all, you know, involved, all marinating in this new band called Mango Groove, because you can hear like the Ndlamu sounds in there, you can hear like the Kwela sounds in the music, and then jazz sounds, and they had 11 musicians all together. They had a full brass section. It was a massive band, and it was like a combination of people from different cultures creating this new sound, which in itself is a form of protest. It's like saying, like, we're going to ignore all of the restrictions that we've had up to this point, and we're going to all get together as the Rainbow Nation, and we're going to make music together, and we're going to, and most of the Mango Groove music was very uplifting, very like, we're going to get people all together, and we're going to have a party, we're going to have fun. And that was a beautiful thing. Now, most of the musicians from Mango Groove met each other at WITS. Claire Johnson wasn't one of the original members, but she was also a graduate from WITS. She actually got a degree whilst touring. She got a Bachelor of Arts degree whilst touring with Mango Groove. So she was studying and touring at the same time. But one of the iconic musicians that was included in the band was a guy called Big Voice Jack Lerole. He was a famous Kwela musician and jazz musician from the 1950s. And the guys, the four original founding members, met him at Gallo Studios, at Gallo Records, and they said, don't you want to join our band? And so he joined the band, and Mango Groove was born. Another interesting connection is this guy called Peter Cohen. He was one of the members of Mango Groove, but previously he'd been a member of a band called Bright Blue. And then later on in 2003, he joined Freshly Ground. So this guy was like beginning, middle, and end of all of these eras that we're talking about at the moment. So I just think Mango Groove was an embodiment of where in 1990s where South Africa wanted to go to.
This is Kaya 959.
We are rhythm and beat.
Okay, I want to see you dance to the song.
Lyric.
I think wherever Leroy is, he's having so much fun. Oh, because we all know you are in crutches. Right,
yes, exactly. So that's very cute.
I'd love to see you.
It's
dance,
very cute. And so, especially with that Liquid Deep song. Trying to dance with crutches,
yes,
and
yes,
to that
hun.
Specific song.
Yes, yes.
There's too many beats there for me.
Mm, you must just dance.
That's how I landed up breaking my foot in the first place.
Yeah.
Anyway, so Margaret Singana, you know, we've got a very interesting tradition of musicals in this country. Musicals have been like the catalyst for a lot of like social change in this country. Like starting in 1959 with King Kong and all of the iconic musicians that played there, a lot of them landed up defecting out of the country and to the UK and to the United States because of the musical King Kong and its success. Then we had Sarafina in the 1980s, and this specific song is from a musical from the 1970s called Ipitombi, which means "Where is the girl?" It wasn't originally called that. It was called The Warrior originally, and then later on they decided to change the name to Ipitombi. What I find quite interesting is that the people who wrote the musical were two white ladies, sisters, mother and daughter, and they wrote it. So the music, although it is very like indigenous sounding, it's more like superficially indigenous sounding. It's not like legitimate. It's like you can't say it's a Bakanga song or that it's Isatamiya or that it's Khoela. It's like it's attempting to be South African, and that's quite interesting. Now Margaret Singana was an iconic South African musician. She started her career in the 1960s. She was a domestic worker, and the way she got discovered, which is quite interesting because there's another famous artist that was discovered in a similar way, was by her employer, who walked into the house. She was busy cleaning the one day and they heard her singing and they were like, wow, this chick can sing. And so they recorded her voice and they sent it to the record company and they were like, yes, this girl is a talent, and they signed her to a record deal. Unfortunately, like Mercy Pakele, she was abused in the music industry. They took such advantage of Margaret Singana, and she landed up dying a pauper.
Yeah.
And the sad thing about Margaret Singana is that she landed up having a stroke before before she passed away. So for the last 10 years or so, she was incapacitated. And the interesting thing is that, you know, Pamela, we've had this discussion before about creatives, and it's not like when you're creative, if you're not there, you're not getting paid. And the problem with Margaret was she relied heavily, because she wasn't getting paid royalties for her songs, she relied heavily on stage performance. And because she didn't have control of her, well, she didn't have control of her body because of the stroke, she struggled to get gigs and she couldn't make money. And towards the end of her life, there was nothing left. There were people taking care of her. And that's such an indictment on the state of the South African music industry and how the people can't actually generate enough money to sustain themselves, which is quite sad, because the way I see it is like this: in the South African music industry, we kill the goose that lays the golden egg. You get them. They've got
the executives take the money,
exactly,
and then the goose itself gets ill-treated, abused, and
killed.
That's it.
And there was only one egg.
And we move on very quickly looking for another goose. And
exactly.
Then we ask why.
Instead of nurturing the geese that lay golden eggs and making more golden eggs. And so that's the really sad part, because I think that Margaret Singana could have been a Brenda Fassie. She could have been a Yvonne Chaka Chaka. But I think she was so abused in the industry that it was like sporadic. She was very big in the musical theater world. That's where she started and she did very well there. But from a recording industry perspective, she could have been much bigger. She had a phenomenal voice. She had great presence, but she was cut short by the illness, and then that was the end of that, which is really sad. What I also find interesting about this music is that in the 1980s, songs very much stuck to this whole thing of like a 2 minute song or a 3 minute song, and then you moved on to the next thing. And as the years progressed, these songs got longer. But now with the TikTok revolution that we've got,
it's
going on,
thicker.
The way that songs are written have completely altered. So now you'll probably find when you listen to a song, because of the TikTok generation, a lot of songs start with a chorus because they want to get you in immediately, then move on to a verse, which has completely shifted the way composers are creating music. And it actually heralds all the way back to the 1950s at the beginning of our contemporary music revolution, where a lot of songs then started with the choruses and then moved to the verses. And only in the 1970s did that sort of start shifting, where you'd start a song with a verse, then move on to a chorus. And so songs are shorter and they're starting with the hooks and then moving on to the boring stuff, which is the verses, which no one cares about because that can't fit onto a TikTok video because that's boring. Anyway, and then we've got Liquid Deep, who was 2010. So now we've done 70s, 80s, 90s, zeros and tens. So Liquid Deep, a really cool band, two guys, a guy from America and a guy from Alex. The guy from America came to South Africa, Jonathan, and he was really fascinated by our brand of house music, which is completely different from like Chicago house or American house or British house. It's very uniquely South African, and he was fascinated by the way that we produce house music. And so he was like hustling for someone like who could teach him about South African house music. And he met this guy called Tabo from Alex. They became friends. And Tabo, incidentally, wanted to learn more about production. And so the two of them started like working together, and out of that was born Liquid Deep. And this is one of my favorite songs alone. There's just something about it. It's got a groove. It feels like a traveling song. Like, it's got like movement in it. Like the type of song you would listen with your friends on the way to KZN. Because isn't house picking
to a derby? To a derby.
So I think it was a mutually beneficial relationship. This song came from their second album, Fabrics of the Heart, and which won an Album of the Year SAMA Award. And from there onwards, these guys became so big. They toured the US, they toured Europe. They were highly involved all over the place. Endorsement deals with Ben Sherman and Sunglass Hut. Can Sunglass Hut please endorse me? Because I need another pair of sunglasses. Shameless plug. Hashtag Prada. Hashtag the devil wears Prada. Anyway, and so beautiful music, tasteful. And the beauty of it is that it's got like, it's very South African, but it still has like an international flavor to it. And that's mainly because of Jonathan. I just think a phenomenal combination of two completely different cultures creating something brand new, which seems to be a bit of a theme for today, which was like freshly ground, mango groove, liquid deep, which is like this, like assimilation of different cultures and like immersing yourselves in different cultures to create new sounds. The last song that we're playing is a Chico song. And Chico, although he was a very iconic solo artist, he was highly instrumental in writing music for so many other artists. But the song that we're ending with is like a 1980s, like it takes Mercy Pakele to the next level. You know, it's like Mercy Pakele with a pop. And not just the bubble gum, but with a pop.
Yeah.
And I hope you guys enjoy it.
Thank you. So we obviously, this is how we're going to wrap the show.
This is how we're wrapping.
With Chico Twala. And then we are back with you next week.
Yes. Click kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it. To download the Point of View podcast.